Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast presented by the Chargers Podcast Network. My name is Steven, and I'm the host as always, and joining me is my guy, Tyler. Tyler, what's up, man? How you doing tonight?
Doing very well, but wondering, Steven, why don't we live in RVs next to each other?
That would definitely make for an easier recording process, for sure. We'd get more content in person, although recording outside of an RV, not the best backdrop or audio quality, I would imagine, as well. But maybe someday down the road when we're old and gray, we can do the RV thing next to each other.
Sounds good. We'll live in a van down by the river or something.
Love it. Jim Harbaugh obviously had a wonderful press conference today at the annual ownership meetings where he and highlighted that him and Greg Roman are living next to each other in RVs. Apparently, Greg Roman has a nicer RV, but Jim had to clarify that he's getting into his future house earlier than Greg. So Jim wins the competition of nicer living situation, apparently. So a lot of fun stuff to dive into there. And then we are going to highlight our draft non-negotiables. This is an episode idea that we wanted to hit on. You know, we did a form of this on our own channel for free agency, in terms of free agency must-haves, the essentials, if you will. These are the things that Tyler and I believe that this team has to accomplish in free agency and obviously now in the draft going forward. So should be a fun conversation today. Lots of great information from Jim Harbaugh's press conference, and then we'll dive into the draft show as always. Before we get to that conversation, Tyler and I are fans of the team, just like you guys are. The opinions of this show, the opinions that we share every single week on this episode, are just that. They are our opinions, not the opinions of the organization. At the end of the day, we are independent content creators, and this is a great platform for us to share our opinions. So it's been a lot of fun, and will continue to be a lot of fun as much as we can be. So that being said, Tyler, let's dive into these Jim Harbaugh takeaways today. Again, if you missed it, it was like a 35-minute conversation that Jim Harbaugh was giving to the media. Lots of great questions about Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, the draft, overall philosophies. Some people asked him about like the 49ers, which is like whatever. But Tyler, if you had an initial maybe big key takeaway here from the Jim Harbaugh press conference, which would be the starting point for you?
The quote that basically suggests that Jim Harbaugh really, really likes Joey Bosa and really loved what he did on film last year. I think a lot of us going into this free agent process, we were thinking, okay, you know, given the injury history and the contract, you know, the Chargers might have to move on from Joey Bosa, but when he's on the field and if he's on the field, he's awesome. And clearly Jim Harbaugh feels that way, to the point where he said that Joey was having a better year than Khalil through that stretch until he got hurt. Now, I'm not sure which particular stretch. I don't know if it means like all the 9-ish games he played in that 10-week stretch before he, you know, departed for the rest of the season. Was it just a key specific stretch after the bye? I don't know. But that's a lot of praise considering Khalil Mack was someone who could have been a defensive player of the year. And in my opinion, the best player on the Chargers all of last season. So for Jim Harbaugh to look at Joey Bosa and say, that guy was having a better year, or at least a better stretch than Khalil Mack, says a lot. So they have a lot of confidence in him to be that player again, a lot of confidence in themselves to get Joey back to that. And it's very exciting for him to go out and say that was eye-opening, I'll be honest. I did not expect Jim to say that after the year that Khalil Mack had, but clearly they believe in him.
Yeah, that belief, I think, probably stems from, you know, his days of watching him at Ohio State and everything that he's done in the NFL since this point. And when we were discussing Joey as like a trade candidate or a release or anything like that, it was always kind of like, well, if you're a team who thinks you can get this guy healthy, you have the potential to get a top 8 edge rusher in the league on your team. And I think it's obvious that Jim believes that Ben Herbert can get Joey Bosa right, get 16, 17 games out of Joey Bosa, and they believe that Jesse Minter can get him back to being a top 8 edge rusher. So, you know, the Chargers, a lot went wrong last season, but the performance of the edge rushers was right. I mean, we highlighted it every single week. It felt like whether it was Khalil, Tule, or Joey, that was like our staple weekly segment was which edge rusher was the best. And it's a great luxury to have. Jesse Minter highlighted that in his kind of opening press conference to the media as well, where you look at around the league and how many teams on paper have a better trio of edge rushers than what the Chargers have with Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, and Tuli Tuipulotu, with everybody presumably healthy and taking a step forward in development. So it's obviously the strength of the team at this point in time. This is the best position group remaining on the roster. Obviously can kind of remove quarterback because there's only the one player that makes an impact there. But if once you remove quarterback, right, it's those are the best players on the team in terms of the position room. So it was kind of a surprise, but then I thought about it more and I'm like, okay, like if you really believed in your staff the way that Jim Harbaugh does, I guess I maybe overthought the Joey Bosa thing because, you know, he does have that potential to get back to that top eight form. And I know that a lot of people feel a certain way about him, but if you just look at the numbers of when Joey Bosa was healthy across that like post bye stretch to the Packers game, he was producing like a top eight edge rusher. And I think that's obviously something that Jim Harbaugh believes they can get back out of him.
Yeah. And that's so exciting. Not that it wasn't exciting when they already, you know, retained him, like, okay, the potential is there. You have Minter, super exciting, but for Jim to go out and say that, like, that means that they're really excited about Joey Bosa. And I personally disagree. I do think Khalil Mack was better during that stretch.
Right.
I think being healthy and look, he had a really, really good season. So it's not like,
sacks, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, excellent season from him. And during that stretch was still phenomenal all on his own. But Joey, I believe, did have a higher pass rush win rate against true pass sets during that first 10 weeks. So it's not unfounded what Jim Harbaugh was saying. Like, there is at least statistics, including the film, to support that.
Yeah. And I think part of this also is the Jesse Minter equation. And we kind of talked about this with Cody Alexander, where he kind of pointed that Jesse Minter blitzed a lot, did a lot of simulated pressures at Michigan, in part because he didn't have the edge rushers to hold up. Well, now you have three guys who, as Daniel Popper has pointed out a few times, have been on the field together. I think it was like 60 snaps last year and they had like 9 sacks. I forget the exact number there. But it's a trio when you get them all on the field together. We've seen it be a closing unit for the team. We've seen it be an explosive pass rush trio for the team. And then you can add in Morgan Fox to that group as well. So if you're Jesse Minter sitting there like, hey, like, I know I'm going to have to take some lumps at linebacker, maybe a defensive tackle. I want to keep the edge rush intact. And maybe that was kind of the priority from a defensive side of things. And now Jesse Minter can kind of be a little bit of a mad scientist and just cook up NASCAR packages with 4 really, really high-end pass rushers.
Absolutely. I mean, no disrespect to Jalen Harrell and Brady McGregor, the 2 current draftable edge rushers for Michigan, but like, you know, Jesse Minter did not get the Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo season that McDonald had. He was making this defense and creating a great defense, the best one in college football, with 2 edge rushers that will be maybe like 6th, 7th round guys, could go undrafted. Tuli, Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, that's a very different caliber of talent. And sure, they're facing a different caliber of talent across from them, but this is more talent he's had at edge rusher by far, quite a bit.
Yeah, and obviously he was at Vanderbilt before Michigan. You know, the Ravens edge rush room when he was still there. This is easily the most talent he's had at the edge rush room. So I would imagine he's very excited, and Jim Harbaugh seems to indicate that as well. Flipping to the other side of the ball, Jim Harbaugh spoke a few different times about the offensive line. I wanted to highlight specifically his comments about Jamari Sawyer and Jordan McFadden, highlighting the versatility of both of those players. Obviously, we've seen Jamari play at left tackle and right guard. Jordan McFadden played left tackle and right tackle in college, played exclusively this past season at left guard when he was a lineman. He's also done like the fullback stuff. He's done the H-back stuff. He lined up in the slot one time. So Jordan McFadden got a lot of different experience playing in roles last season. But Jim Harbaugh believes that Jordan McFadden could play center as well. And I think as we kind of transition into this period of time where the Chargers are going to try and remake their offensive line, you need guys like those two, like Bradley Bozeman, who can play multiple spots, because I think the goal really is simply going to be get the best 5 possible players out there on the field, and we can kind of figure out the positions going forward. Now, we've said this before, Bradley Bozeman is not going to preclude me from drafting a high-end center if one is there. And same thing with Jordan McFadden. I'm not going to walk into the season thinking Jordan McFadden is my backup center, but it gives you the options where if we draft a guy who can play center but is better suited at guard, like a Bo Limmer from Arkansas came out in an interview with Justin Mello and said that he feels best at guard, but he can play center because that's what the team needed last season in Arkansas. So maybe you draft a guy like that in the third, fourth round, and he's your starting right guard, or maybe he's your starting center. Like, it just gives you different kind of options. And then Jamari can play different spots. McFadden can play different spots. And I think that's really what this first year is going to be about along the offensive line, is just getting the best five out there. And we'll see how they really address it in terms of the draft picks that they make.
Yeah, there's so much flexibility. This interior offensive line class, especially if you include like Fatanu and Fuaga, some people do. This interior offensive line class is really, really good. Mm-hmm. And the more I dive into, you know, some of these day three guys, you mentioned Hunter Norzad recently, watched him, loved him, like as a day three guy, obviously, but was really, really strong there. So there's so much flexibility for what these guys can do, center, guard, you name it. If they find that there's a better fit, someone can play right guard, someone can be a center or backup center, great. Like, that does give them options. The Chargers, you know, we talked to Tom Telesco, like, they try to find guys that are versatile and can do different things. So I'm very curious then what happens with Jamari, because you might just come out and say, Jamari's our starting guard. Didn't happen, right? Some guys are starters by default. Zion's a starter by default, given the first round draft status and frankly, the talent. Slater's obviously your starter, but he didn't really come out outright and say that Jamari's our starter. So I am very curious what the plan is there. Do they view him a bit more as a tackle? I don't know, because while I do think Jamari is a guard, if Harbaugh views him, maybe he's a better swing tackle for this team. That does address a need this Chargers team really, really has had for quite some time. Like, they have never really had a true, legitimate, long-ish term plan at offensive tackle as the third guy on the field. Even Jamari, when he played tackle, felt like a rushed, let's give this a shot. You know, so far, if he's their tackle, their swing tackle, then great. But I am curious, are they going to bring competition to start ahead of him? I think if maybe the Chargers had started free agency with more cap space and had made some moves earlier, then maybe you're looking at like a Zeitler, for example, to coming over from Baltimore and being the Chargers' right guard. But because they didn't, now they're kind of like, okay, is it going to be Jamari? Is it going to be McFadden? Is it going to be a draft pick? So I'm really excited to see how that plays out. But like you said, the best five should be on the field. And no doubt in my mind, Harbaugh, Greg Roman, these guys will figure that out.
Yeah, I think as it pertains to Jamari, I still believe that his best position is at guard. Maybe that's a left guard, maybe that's a right guard. I don't really know. But, you know, when I graded Jamari as a prospect, you know, you look into his background a bit, and he was, I don't know if it was the top rated guard, but he was a top five guard prospect going into college. And then he played guard, he played tackle. And just like from a traits perspective, I think he translates best as a guard. I think it's great to know that he can play tackle in a pinch. I think a lot of fans really overvalue like how he played in 2022. Played at a solid level at left tackle, but a lot of people make him out to be like, oh, like he should start at right tackle, like unquestioned starter. And I'm not there. I still believe that Trey Pipkins is a pretty clearly better right tackle than Jamari would be. But that being said, they don't have that swing tackle option right now. And it's not like the Chargers are going to neglect that. So maybe he's your starting right guard. Maybe Jamari is essentially viewed as like, he's just our swing everything. And if anything happens to the starting five, Jamari's just going to come in. He can play basically four of the five spots. I don't know if he could play center, but I know he can play guard. I know he can play tackle, at least in a pinch. So I still believe that his best spot is at guard, but like if push comes to shove and you have to put him back out at left tackle or right tackle, then the Chargers can be comfortable with him knowing that he can at least give you, you know, average to above average tackle play.
How do you feel about McFadden moving to center, which he's obviously never played before?
Yeah, I'm not opposed to that idea. I think his athletic traits translate to, to that position, especially if the team wants to do a lot of, you know, pulling or outside zone work. I think his athletic traits fit that wonderfully. I would be a little hesitant to try him out at a new position in his second season. And it's a very similar conversation to, you know, a lot of people wonder if Zion could play center. It's like, well, eventually you do want these guys to find one spot where they feel most comfortable playing. And it's not just like, you know, a cornerback can switch sides or he can play in the slot. Like, it's a lot of the same movements. You don't have, you know, a strong plant leg or anything like that as a corner. You generally are doing the same kind of things. You might have to adjust some techniques in terms of zone coverages, but it's a lot of overlap. There's not a lot of overlap if you're playing left tackle and right guard. It's different movements, different strategies. You're playing different kind of body types. Like, you have to relearn a ton of different mechanics. So I wouldn't be opposed to seeing what he can do at center, but I'm definitely not like heading into the season with like McFadden being center too. I think that would be a mistake. But if center is his best position, then, you know, he can take some snaps and see how it goes.
Yeah, I agree.
Just real quick, looking at if they wanted to address guard in free agency, obviously a lot of guys have come off the board, but Andres Pete is still a free agent. I'm not even going to try and say that name. Vitae from the Lions, excuse me. I'm sorry. If he signs with the Chargers, I'll get the name right. But he's a free agent if you want to go down that road. Tyree Phillips, who played for the Baltimore Ravens, he's played some guard and some tackle. He's another one who the Chargers could look at. So not a ton of options out there, but you know, there's Dalton Reisner still out there. I guess I should have led with that one. He's the best player on that list for sure. They have some decent options out there if they want to explore a veteran guard.
Mm-hmm. Boy, Jim Harbaugh certainly loves his offensive line. The quote today about, you know, what position group depends on no one else to succeed, but everyone else depends on them to succeed. He's obviously talking about the offensive line. He loves his offensive line. It's going to be, I don't know how good the Chargers will be or how great they'll be, but the offensive line is going to be good. That's for sure.
Yeah. I forget the guy's name. He played offensive line for the 49ers and he does like a podcast now. I think we talked about this clip before. This is great podcasting. I shouldn't have known this, but just brought it up. Anyways, one of the former 49ers offensive linemen would say that Jim would go to the offensive line dinners. And he was the only head coach that this guy played for that went to offensive line dinners, because Jim just values the offensive line that much. And that's not necessarily a surprise, right? Like, he's talked about the offensive line and building through the trenches several times. But, you know, they're going to invest in the offensive line. We can say that for sure. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the same kind of pathway as everybody is, you know, the Harbaugh pick right now is offensive tackle at number 5. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but whatever happens in this draft, whatever happens in free agency going forward, they are going to invest in the offensive line. He's going to have it be an identity, because I mean, look what he did at Michigan. They won the Joe Moore Award for like 2 out of the last 3 years. It was a ton of resources poured into there. Same thing at the 49ers, same thing at Stanford. So he loves the offensive line because he knows how important it is to protect the quarterback and be able to run the football.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Tyler. I think the last thing here to mention from the press conference today is Jim's stance on the 5th overall pick. I had some very interesting comments there. A lot of interesting JJ McCarthy comments coming out of the ownership meetings today. We'll see exactly how that affects the Chargers, but you know, Jim's comment that caught my attention was that essentially they view the 5th overall pick as the 1st overall pick, especially if quarterbacks go 1 through 4. And he specifically mentioned that like the scale of draft value would change, because at 5 overall, if quarterbacks go 1 through 4, the Chargers or another team could have the pick of the best non-quarterback in the draft. So I thought it was interesting that he highlighted the various options that the Chargers might have in terms of overall plan, if you will, at number 5, instead of highlighting, yeah, like offensive tackle class is great, wide receiver class is great. He's like, yeah, we have a lot of options. If we want to move back, we can. If we want to stay, we can. Kind of echoes what Joe Ortiz has said as well.
It's the right approach. They know, and he said, they're going to get a great player, or at least they're going to get a great prospect at 5, regardless. Even if Marvin Harrison Jr. goes 4th, they're still getting a great prospect at 5. They could also trade back and get a great prospect. They could trade back a lot more and get a great prospect. Maybe not great anymore, but it's still a very good one. So they're confident in their options. You know, a lot of Chargers fans have mentioned, like, this is the highest the Chargers are going to pick. under Jim Harbaugh for the next 5-10 years or whatever. And that's probably true. I hope it's true that this is the highest the Chargers are picking for the next decade or so. At the same time, it also means this is the most draft capital that they can acquire by trading back under Jim Harbaugh, going from 5 to 11, you know, and getting, let's say, 11 and 23 from the Vikings. That's the most the Chargers are probably going to have under Jim Harbaugh too. So everything is on the table. Everything is enticing, and they're going to get a good player. And I hope that it's 4 quarterbacks in a row.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I think the Chargers are in a great spot either way. If quarterbacks go 1 through 3 and then the Cardinals stick and pick, or maybe somebody else trades up for one of the wide receivers or whatever, the Chargers are in a great spot. A lot of this draft is becoming like too chalky to me. And maybe that's just because, you know, we've heard this same song and dance before regarding quarterback prospects. And, you know, 2021 was supposed to go 1 through 4, and then Mac Jones fell and Justin Fields fell. Obviously very different circumstances there, but it just feels like there's kind of a chaos bomb looming in the top 3 specifically. I mean, I'm curious to see kind of how that plays out. A lot of people think maybe the Broncos could be aggressive and trade up. The Patriots not sold on this quarterback class. So it just feels too chalky for me at 1 through 3, which is probably a little bit of my anxiety, maybe, I guess, but we'll see what happens come draft night. But 1 through 3, I think, is going to be a little bit more dangerous than it feels right now.
Yeah, it could be. The Patriots could go, yeah, we'll take Marvin Harrison Jr. And that would, you know, throw off every rest of the draft. You know, it's very possible that is potentially the best player in the class. So I would get why they would. The Vikings are also just sitting there with 11 and 23. They moved up. They're going to move up into the top 5, I think. Who is it? So who in the top 5 is not taking a quarterback? Obviously the Chargers, not the Cardinals. But is there someone in that top 3 that wants to trade back and take the 11 and 23 and next year's second or whatever it is? You know, whatever it is, like there is something. The Vikings are waiting to do something. They're assuming that they can get it. So who is it? Who is that team? I hope it's the Chargers, but you never know. There's a surprise every year, and things will change. And right now, whatever we're saying, by the time we get to, you know, a month from now when the draft hits, it could be a totally different quarterback that's being talked about at 2. I think 1's pretty set in stone.
Yeah.
But everything else, 2, 3, and then what happens at 4, all could be very different in a month. So we'll see. It's exciting, though.
Yeah, Eric Eager, formerly of PFF, currently of Sumer Sports, pointing this out that the week of the draft, Malik Willis was getting like top 3 consensus hype. Will Levis last year, same kind of deal, top 3 consensus hype, betting markets, all that. And then things changed. You know, Trey Lance was, I don't think he was one of the 3 most likely betting choices for the 49ers at number 3 until like the day before the draft. So there's a lot of people talking in certainties right now, and a lot can change in the next month as we kind of come down the home stretch here.
Yep. It's exciting, though. It gives us stuff to talk about and speculate about. And honestly, the last time the Chargers had the situation, and I think Tom Telesco said as much, they felt like they had the number 1 overall pick in 2016 because they knew that it was quarterback. And so they had the 3rd pick. And so whoever that was going to be was the best player they thought in the draft. And I remember everyone thinking, okay, it's Jalen Ramsey.
Ronnie Stanley was the betting favorite that year.
Yeah, it was not Joey Bosa. And no. I know it wasn't because I was at SeaWorld at the season ticket event at SeaWorld. And everyone went, what? Whoa, to that pick. I've got a video of it. So no one can say, oh, I knew it was Joey Bosa. Like everyone thought it was somebody else. I didn't expect Joey Bosa at the time. So Chargers are also could be a surprise team. Everyone thinks it's one of 2 or 3 players. Could be the 4th one.
Yeah, man, just the wheels are turning, right? And I mean, the coaches come to this late, obviously. I mean, the Chargers just barely hired their coaching staff, you know, 2 months ago. So now that the coaches are at the same spot as the scouts, as the front office folks, this is really when things start to get, you know, pushed into motion. All the quarterbacks are doing their visits. All the other prospects are doing their visits. So it's certainly a lot of fun and a natural transition point to our draft non-negotiables here. We've prepared a few of them. We'll see how much we can get to in the next, you know, 15, 20 minutes or so. But Tyler, if you had to pick 1 non-negotiable for the 2024 draft for the Chargers, what is your first choice there?
the Chargers have to find their center of the future. And that doesn't mean that the center has to start this year, but has to be their center of the future in the way that, well, like Tyler Linderbaum is for the Ravens. Granted, that's a first round pick, that Creed Humphrey is for the Chiefs. They need to find stability at this spot, because right now, Justin Herbert will be on center number 5. And next year, if Bozeman walks in free agency, it'll be center number 6. And you need stability there. And it can't be a stopgap thing. It can't be a 1 year sort of thing all the time. There needs to be stability there, because I think that, you know, Justin Herbert needs that for protection calls, for stability, for confidence, and for, you know, avoiding injuries. Corey Linsley goes down, things are a bit more chaotic. You know, Kellen Moore maybe wasn't able to orchestrate the best protection plans. And Justin Herbert, you know, gets hurt and takes a beating on the field because they couldn't figure that out. They need stability at the spot. So whatever the Chargers decide to do, we'll see. The Ravens, since 2009, 9 of their centers, their starting centers that they've had before Tyler Linderbaum since 2009, are day 3 picks or acquired with day 3 picks or undrafted free agents. So I think the Chargers, and I think it makes sense even just looking at the board of players and where they are and the prospects in this class, I think the Chargers are going to look to day 3 at any point to see if they can find their center of the future. But I just think they have to find that next guy for a very, very long time, or at least for more than a year. It's so inconsistent right now with the Chargers. Even with Corey Linsley, as great as he was, there were some inconsistencies. And of course, like, the health issue is not his fault by any means, but they got to find that guy. They absolutely have to find that guy. If they want to be successful, go deep into the postseason, really bring this offense to the next level, have a great run game, they got to find their center of the future.
Yeah, and I mean, having a long-term center just solves so many issues. And you know, I think Will Clapp in a vacuum as a backup was a better player than he was given credit for. It was just that the difference of communication and you know, just the IQ multiplier that Corey Linsley was, just had ramifications across the whole line. And so when you lose that, like, legitimate top-notch center, it affects everybody. It doesn't just affect the left guard and the right guard. It affects the tackles. It affects the quarterback. It affects the running game. It affects everything. And you look at kind of who Jim Harbaugh has had, like, center has been a position that they've invested in across his tenure. They've recruited it really well. They've had some centers go on into the NFL. I forget his name, who's on the Seahawks right now. Oluwatimi, yeah, Oluwatimi was their, like, top-notch center. And so what's going to be interesting to see is the kind of body type that they prefer, if they prefer kind of a Bradley Bozeman 2.0 body type, or if they're okay with kind of an undersized center. But I completely agree, because it's just the effects of having a quality long-term center are so great in your favor. And then also, I think this is the best center class we've seen in quite some time from top to bottom. I think the whole, like, guy can play all 5 spots thing when talking about an offensive lineman is a tad overrated. Like, Graham Barton, a lot of people view him as a center, maybe in a pinch, but he's not a true center. He played center as a freshman, but he's played tackle. He's probably going to settle into a guard, but if you want to count him, you can count him. But you have 3 potential top tier center prospects in Graham Barton and Jackson Powers Johnson, as well as Zach Frazier. So if they want to be aggressive in the first round or early in the second round, they can do that. But then this collection of, like, round 3, round 4 center prospects, it just keeps going, man. We talked about Mason McCormick on our mock draft show as somebody who could play center, did the protections at guard, which is very, very unique. But you look at Cedric Van Pran, you look at Hunter Norzad, Tanner Bordellini. I mentioned Bo Limmer earlier, who could play center or guard for you. You know, this group, you know, Drake Nugent, who obviously the team is familiar with. You have a guy like Satoa Laomea from Utah who could play center, who was the Utah's emergency center. There's just so many different options. And so it to me, it feels very reminiscent of last year's tight end class, where it's like, I don't necessarily have, like, I'm not super picky about the choice. I just want a choice, because this center class is just so deep, so stacked with talent. And I'm very anxious to see them get, you know, that center of the future knocked out of the way.
Yeah, I agree. And they got to find, not that you can do this in year one, and you might not even do it with this particular center prospect, but Herbert had outlets and comfort things and comfort players and plays on the field. That was Keenan Allen. Okay, if it's not Keenan Allen, who is it? It's probably Mike Williams. Okay, if it's not him, it's maybe Austin Eckler. If it's not him, you have Corey Linsley taking care of everything. That's all changed. And yeah. So you got to find the next consistent thing that makes Herbert comfortable on the field. Could be a wide receiver at five or a tight end at five or whatever. Certainly could be Bozeman, could be Quentin Johnston. I think is Josh Palmer. But you got to continue to establish that comfort. I think Herbert plays so much better when he's comfortable. And that makes sense. Every quarterback plays better when they're comfortable. But
yeah,
I do think with Herbert, you got to find that guy. So I think center is a great foundational building piece moving forward for Herbert to play his best self.
Yeah, and it's just a natural transition, right? You have Bozeman on the one-year deal. Herbert can handle a lot of the protections. And so this center prospect can sit and learn for a year and then transition right into the starting role in year two. That was a great one. I think my first one here, I need to see the Chargers double dip at corner. And they signed Christian Fulton this week. And I really like, I think that's a good dart throw signing. But there's a lot of risk there in terms of his availability. He's never played a full season after his rookie season. You know, he's been up and down from a consistency standpoint. The peaks are certainly peaks that you're very interested in and optimistic about. You know, in 2021, he was a guy who kind of was transitioning towards being a potential top tier corner. He was the numbers that season were fantastic for him. You have Asante Samuel Jr. on the roster, but he's a free agent after next season. And I'm not super sold on his fit in this defense. And then you have Jasir Taylor and Dean Leonard, who are great special teams players. I think Dean showed some flashes. I think Jasir has shown some flashes, but they never had the ability or opportunity, rather, to show really the kind of consistency that you are. So that's a lot of uncertainty at corner. And cornerback is kind of transitioning away from being like a top premium position in the NFL based off like how they're paying it and things like that. But it still is a position where you have to have a pipeline of talent, and the Chargers do not have that right now. And so I look at what the Chiefs did a couple of drafts ago when they were able to draft Trent McDuffie and Joshua Williams. That's kind of like what I'm picturing. Maybe not in the first round. If the Chargers trade down, that's probably more of an option. But this is a great cornerback class. I have 12 of them inside my top 60 players so far. There's a lot of different flavors, whether you want somebody who can do inside, outside, straight outside, play the slot. This is a draft class that can give you a lot of different profiles. And so the Chargers need a starting slot corner. They need a long-term outside corner option. And I think you have to do that in the draft. They can go pay somebody else in free agency if they want, but similar to center, you got to get some long-term assets here into the pipeline, because right now you don't really have any. So take advantage of a great cornerback class, take multiple bodies. You have 2 fourth round picks courtesy of the Keenan Allen trade. I think this is the right opportunity to double dip at cornerback and give Jesse Minter a long-term option outside of the current players on the roster.
100% agree here. This corner class is awesome. And I think that especially because this is a new regime, new defensive play caller, new defensive coordinator scheme, etc., you want to establish these guys early on, get them in year one, and you're going to spend the next few years with this group, and everyone's going to understand what's going on in this defense. So go get those guys. This corner class is awesome. You can pick anything, any player you want, any style you need, similar to wide receiver, and feel good about it. You know, I'm looking through the list of names that I've watched. I've watched only 15 so far, but I mean, you can get guys very late, like a Josh Wallace from Michigan, obviously. But there's this nice like round 3, round 4, maybe even into round 5 range of guys that are really good. Obviously like Max Melton probably goes second round. But then you're talking Cam Hart, DJ James, Jerrion Jones, the slot corner from Florida State. Love him. There's so many good corners. I know you just watched Cam Hart. You are head over heels for that guy for sure, because he's he's awesome. Like there's so many good corners. It really does feel like receiver. You know, I'm waiting to be really disappointed. And maybe I don't have a first round grade on everybody on 15 players. I don't. But you're never really disappointed. These guys are all good. So I agree with you. Go get one of these guys. Maybe it's round 4. But double dip there for sure. Continue to get bodies. And I'll just continue with that, because we're on the same page. I'm just a bit flipped because I say one of these fourth round picks needs to be a wide receiver. I think you have two of them. You know, maybe you can use Keenan Allen's pick, the pick that you got for him, to get a receiver. You're not getting Keenan Allen in the fourth round. I don't think you're getting a Puka Nacua player. The odds of that happening are very, very small for the Chargers, but you can get a really good player. Do you want someone fast on the outside who can fly and get open? You can get Taj Washington from USC. You can get Anthony Gold from Oregon State. Really like Anthony Gold. I wish more people were talking about him because he played so much on the outside and won so much on the outside. He's not just your traditional like gadget speedster type. He can do a lot on the outside. And oh, by the way, he runs a 4.3. Go get him. You want a slot player? You know, go ahead and get Malik Washington, who I still don't understand why he's projected to go as low as he is, but whatever. If he's there in the fourth round, go get him. Who else? I liked Anaya Smith from Texas A&M. You want a yak monster? Go get him. You know, shallow crosser to the house. Go for it. I liked Utah's Devon Vele. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. I don't know if that's a fourth round selection. Probably, but again, like corner though. There's so many of these guys. Pick whoever you want. They're all fantastic. So whatever the Chargers need, you know, Darius Davis will have a role. He's obviously their core special teamer. He's going to be the returner. But this team is going to need to cycle through some receivers. Josh Palmer is in the final year of his deal, so we don't know what the plan is there. So who is that next guy? If Quentin Johnson doesn't work out, do you have someone else in the pipeline? Like, continue to add. You take a receiver at 5, awesome. Do it again on day 3, probably around that fourth round range.
Yeah, I think Josh Palmer is kind of like the key thing here because Josh Palmer can play all 3 spots for your team. So it just gives the Chargers a lot of flexibility. I think that Quentin Johnson is best suited as a backside Z receiver. I think that is where his skill set can be maximized as somebody who can be that yards after the catch guy, be able to have a little bit more space and flexibility. We'll see what happens there. Obviously, his like physical profile would theoretically translate to an X, but I think he's a Z. I think Josh Palmer can play anywhere. And so if you get Marvin Harrison Jr., he's your X, Palmer's your slot, Quentin Johnson is your Z. And then later on, you can get somebody else who can fill in maybe a little bit of different roles as well. If you get Malik Nabers, Nabers is your slot, Palmer's your X, Quentin Johnson is your Z. So it gives the Chargers a lot of flexibility because Palmer can play anywhere and play anywhere really well, in my opinion. So he's kind of the key thing for them because it just gives them that flexibility to attack the wide receiver position in any facet. But I kind of would prefer that corner gets attacked in the fourth round just because it is, you know, much easier to find those wide receivers late than it is the cornerback class. I know this is a great cornerback class, but like you mentioned, these wide receivers you can pick them at any point in time. So I am curious to see how much value is placed on the wide receiver position. You know, Joe Ortiz and Jim Harbaugh both highlighted, hey, we really like the depth of this wide receiver position. So what does that mean? Is that a second and a fourth round pick? Is it a first and a fifth? Is it a second and a sixth? Is it a first and a sixth? Like, I think there's a lot of different options here. And because Josh Palmer can play all those spots, it just gives them that added flexibility going forward.
Yeah, and as Joe Ortiz said, even if they don't get their guy, because this draft class is so good at receiver, someone's getting cut. Someone on another team is getting cut. Yeah. Get that player. And obviously a veteran, maybe you know them, have scouted them before, whatever, have some sort of history with them. So Chargers are, I think, adding 2 receivers, whether it is 2 in the draft, 1 in the draft, 1 in free agency after a cut, etc. But I do really like that chunk of player corners and wide receivers in the fourth round.
Yeah, I think as an adjacent point to that, to me, I think for me, it's they need more explosive playmakers on offense. I mean, I like Josh Palmer. I like Quentin Johnston. I like Gus Edwards. I like the signings of Will Disley and Hayden Hurst. There's not a lot of explosive plays there. I mean, Justin Herbert can create explosive plays with his arm, but they do need an explosive running back. They need an explosive tight end. You know, they need to find probably 2 guys who can be, you know, at that explosive element for this team. It doesn't necessarily mean like you have to get like a third down scat back. It doesn't mean you have to get like an undersized tight end or something like that. You know, I'm not saying you have to go get Jaheim Bell. I'm not saying you have to go get Blake Watson, although those players are fun to watch. But I think highlighting explosive playmaking potential is the approach that I would like to see. at wide receiver. That also does not mean I am anti Marvin Harrison Jr. or Rome Odunze. I think those two players can also create explosive plays for you. So it's just about giving this team easier opportunities to create high end potential plays and not just have to march down the field constantly with a run game and short passing game and things like that. You need some curveballs here in the form of explosive playmaking potential. And I think that's probably my preference in how they would highlight the playmaking positions in the draft, is focus in on that explosive playmaking potential.
Yeah, I would agree. You have two good receivers, or at least guys you feel good about, and they at least said they felt good about those guys. So if you're working the play action game, go find those explosive players. I like the idea of what Kellen Moore was trying to do last year, but they could never figure out the protection to hold up. In those instances, I'm pretty confident that gets figured out with Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman. So now go continue to mine through that and go to those explosive plays, because we saw it in camp and we saw it with, you know, many plays throughout the season. It just, the protection wouldn't hold up as much. So if you can figure out the offensive line, continue to mine through those explosive playmakers, that's where Justin Herbert succeeds.
Yeah. I think if you watch the Michigan offense, that's a lot of high, low reads. You know, it's a lot of Roman Wilson over the top, and I forget their other short receiver's name, but you know, him underneath, or Colson Loveland, the tight end, who I love, by the way. I very much would like to see him in the Chargers next year, or AJ Barner or whoever the tight end was. It's a lot of, hey, let's go explosive first and then let's go short second. And so they do need some guys who can create explosive plays deep, although I think you have that in Palmer and Quentin Johnston. So it's that intermediate short area field. Be able to catch a 5-yard out route, 5-yard slant route, and be able to make it a 15-yard play or 20-yard play or something like that. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see how this all comes together, man. We're officially 1 month away from the draft as of today. Very important draft that really sets the tone for the Jim Harbaugh, Joe Ortiz regime. And we've highlighted this a ton today. A lot of options for the Chargers at any position of need, draft strategy. It really is their oyster this year, because it's the draft class fits all of their needs pretty perfectly, honestly.
It's kind of scary that it does. You know, I'm looking through, and they've set themselves up a bit for this with the free agency moves. Like they've made sure, like, okay, we're pretty solid in these spots that we don't have to reach. So go get one of these defensive tackles, corners, receivers, offensive tackles, you name it. I guess it gets continuing with that then. Don't take a linebacker in round two. You're going to have a few good options there. Like Junior Colson, I think is a genuinely good option. But this class, man, D tackle, receiver, corner, whatever. You take receiver in the first round, there's an awesome corner sitting there in the second round. That might have been a first rounder last year. Just happens to be one of those classes. So I really, really don't need them to take a linebacker in the second round. They'll take a good player if they do. But man, like one of these corners or receivers or D tackles, go that way.
Yeah, I think linebacker and running back, tight end, as much as it pains me as a Brock Bowers guy, I think those are positions you address on day three. You know, we're the league has dubbed that defensive tackle as a premium position. So that's a thing now. And so premium positions, round one, round two, round three, I think is the way you want to go with this. And I think it just kind of, it sets up really nicely, man. They have a lot of great defensive tackle options, corner options. Running back on day three is really deep, really deep too. So it's like, it just kind of works. Like the way that I look at this draft class for the Chargers, it just, like my brain, it just like works. It's like an easy Tetris game, if you will, this year, as opposed to other pieces that you're like, well, I don't know about this guy or that guy or that guy. It's a little bit complicated. This year, it just seems like it lines up really nicely for the Chargers all the way from one through seven.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. This is going to be, I think, the most fun I've had watching the draft in quite some time. Like this is fun. This is fun for the Chargers. I'm excited for this organization. It's so new. We don't know what they're going to do. A blend of, you know, different backgrounds with Jim, with Joe Ortiz, current existing Chargers organization as well. I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. Nobody does. Nobody has any idea what's going to happen. Technically, Jim Harbaugh has even said that we don't know we're picking at five. But I have a feeling they might know.
I'm sure they have a few choices that they prefer at this point. But to your point, they have 9 picks. They could end up making more. I think they should make more, just given their needs and things like that. So it's going to be a ton of fun down the stretch here. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Chris and Matt will be back on the show, on the channel, later on this week. They'll have some thoughts there. They'll have you guys covered throughout the rest of the pre-draft process as well. So make sure and show them some love as they continue to do great work. Eric Smith dropped a great article about the five takeaways from Jim Harbaugh's press conference today. So you can make sure and check that out as well. Lots of great stuff happening here on the Chargers channels, feeds, websites. Hope you guys are consuming all of it because we both are as well. Make sure to leave a like, comment, review, all that good stuff continues to help us grow the show. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Thanks to Tyler for joining me as always. Thanks to Jim for a lot of the great quotes. Thanks to Greg Kim for producing the show as always. We appreciate you guys and we'll see you next time. Bolt up.